WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Should a pregnant woman whose behavior has been deemed to endanger her fetus be legally punished or forced into medical procedures against her will? A study released earlier this year reported that pregnant women across the country have been subjected to arrest and incarceration, detention in mental institutions and drug treatment programs, as well as forced medical interventions, including surgery. The study found 413 criminal and civil cases where law enforcement intervened in the lives of pregnant women. It covered the years 1973, when abortion was legalized, through 2005. The study was conducted by the group National Advocates for Pregnant Women. We're going to hear from the group's executive director, Lynn Paltrow. She says the legal claims used to justify some of these actions rely on the same arguments that are made in support of personhood measures that would grant the fetus full constitutional rights independent of the pregnant woman. We'll also hear from one of the leaders of the personhood movement, Jennifer Mason, and we'll talk about related medical issues with Dr. Barbara Levy, the American College of OBGYN's Vice President for Health Policy. Let's start with Lynn Paltrow, Executive Director of National Advocates for Pregnant Women. Lynn Paltrow, welcome to Fresh Air. When people think of reproductive rights, I think they tend to focus on the rights to birth control and abortion. A lot of your work is dealing with women who want to carry to term. What patterns are you seeing that you think are infringing on the rights of pregnant women?
Well, early on in my career, I started getting cases where anti-abortion arguments were being used to hurt women who had no intention of ending their pregnancies. One of those cases involved Angela Carter, a woman who, at 27 years of age and 25 weeks of pregnancy, became critically ill. And even though she and her doctors and her family were all in agreement that they should keep her alive for as long as possible, somebody decided that the fetus she was carrying was entitled to a right to life, went to the hospital's council, who called an emergency hearing to decide what rights the fetus had, and in the end ordered her to undergo cesarean surgery, knowing that the procedure itself could kill Angela Carter. And in the end, the fetus was born alive but died within 2 hours, and Angela Carter died 2 days later with the cesarean surgery listed as a contributing factor. And while we eventually got the court to say that pregnant women don't lose their rights to medical decision-making and due process, and despite the fact that no state has passed a law holding women criminally or legally accountable for the outcomes of their pregnancies, we continue to see a wide variety of cases in which women are being deprived of virtually every right we associate with constitutional personhood based on the claim that there ought to be completely separate legal rights for fertilized eggs, embryos, and fetuses.
One of the types of cases that you're seeing is where a pregnant woman is arrested or detained and forced to undergo drug treatment because she's being accused of using drugs, illegal drugs that might damage the fetus. Give us an example of that. You're working on a case right now. Why don't you use that as an example?
Yes, we are co-counsel representing a Wisconsin woman, Alicia Beltran, who, when she found out she was pregnant, she went for early prenatal care. And she shared all the relevant health information she had, which included that before she got pregnant, she had struggled with her use of Percocets, that she had stopped using them, and that she was using a drug called Suboxone, which is used to help people treat their withdrawal from opiates. She shared this her information with her healthcare provider, and the result of being pregnant and honest was that she was arrested. Wisconsin in 1998 put into effect a law, amendments to its children code that added unborn children defined as existing from the moment of fertilization. They added that term over 400 times. If pretty much anyone, including a law enforcement official, decided that the woman habitually lacks self-control in the use of alcohol or a controlled substance to a severe degree that creates serious risks to a fetus or a child, none of these terms are defined. And in Ms. Beltran's case, what happened was she confided in her doctor about her past drug use. By the time she started with a new OBGYN, when she was approximately 12 weeks pregnant, she had stopped all use of any drugs. And yet, the next thing she knew, five police officers, five law enforcement officials were at her home. They arrested her. They put her in handcuffs. They took her to an emergency room where she was examined, and that examination said she looks fine, the baby looks fine. Nevertheless, they took her to jail. They put her in leg shackles. They took her to a courtroom where there was already a lawyer appointed for her 12-week fetus, and she was not herself entitled to a lawyer. And the judge, the commissioner, ordered her into a residential treatment program for 90 days that did not even provide the treatment that people were saying she needed.
How long was she kept in mandatory treatment for drug use, even though she said that she'd already given up the drugs?
Alicia Beltran was not using drugs, and she was kept in a residential treatment program under a threat of arrest if she left for 78 days.
So what? Isn't anybody who's charged with a crime entitled to a lawyer? I mean, how could she not have had a lawyer?
Well, there are two things about that. People are entitled to a lawyer when they're arrested. The statute was written in such a way to say we're going to empower the state, law enforcement, people untrained in addiction medicine to deprive women of their physical liberty, but it is not an arrest.
So the Wisconsin law that we've been discussing added unborn child to child abuse laws, right? So the child abuse laws now cover fetuses as well.
It's not the general child abuse law. It is it's in the civil children's code, and it permits depriving pregnant women who habitually lack self-control in the use of drugs or alcohol to be taken into immediate custody only on reasonable suspicion. Many prosecutors in many states, however, have arrested women based on the claim that they were pregnant and used a criminalized drug, arguing that the state's child abuse law should be interpreted to apply to fertilized eggs, embryos, and fetuses and give police officers and others authority over pregnant women. And what our research shows is that they argue that the word child in these statutes ought to be interpreted as giving the state power over pregnant women from the moment they conceive. And what they rely on for that interpretation is very often post-Roe anti-abortion statutes that make declarations of separate rights for eggs, embryos, and fetuses, state feticide laws that are passed, usually in the wake of extreme violence against pregnant women. They're passed with saying that it will provide protection to pregnant women and their unborn children, and then it is turned around and used by prosecutors to justify the arrest of pregnant women themselves.
So an example of that last thing that you described, like if a law is passed to, say, protect a pregnant woman from having her fetus damaged by an abusive spouse or boyfriend, maybe an angry spouse or boyfriend who doesn't even want her to carry to term, would just as soon that the baby be aborted and say they beat her. This kind of law you're describing is designed to protect her from that, but you're saying that kind of law is being used against the pregnant woman herself.
I'm not sure these laws were designed to protect pregnant women. And certainly that was not true for Christine Taylor, who, when she fell down a flight of stairs while she was pregnant and went to the hospital because she was so concerned about the health of her unborn child, she was essentially interrogated, I guess, by a nurse or some other staff member at the hospital. She admitted that early in the pregnancy she had considered possibly having an abortion. She was planning to carry this pregnancy to term. She was very worried about having fallen down the stairs. They send her home. She's left her two little girls with a neighbor. And she, on the way home from the hospital to go back to her children, she is picked up by police and arrested on charges of attempted feticide. She's put in handcuffs. She's kept in jail for 2 days until there is such a national outcry that they release her. But they release her saying, well, we released her because she was only in her second trimester. But if this had happened when she was in her third trimester, we would have been entitled to keep her in jail on this charge of attempted feticide. And the question all of these cases pose, the question that this the Personhood USA really raises is, as a society, do we believe that there's a point in pregnancy when women lose their civil rights?
This is one of your major points in your practice regarding pregnant women, that when an when a quote unborn child, when a fetus is given legal counsel and given full personhood, that the woman who is actually carrying the fetus in her body is deprived of her right.
Well, she's deprived of her personhood. I think that there is no way to add fertilized eggs, embryos, and fetuses to state law as separate persons without subtracting pregnant women as full persons under the Constitution.
How pervasive are laws like the one you're challenging in Wisconsin, where a woman can be charged with mistreating the fetus that she is carrying?
Only 4 states actually have laws that specifically permit depriving women who become pregnant of their physical liberty. Wisconsin through this Children's Code, South Dakota, Oklahoma, and Minnesota through civil commitments laws that permit specifically depriving pregnant women of their physical liberty who use alcohol or drugs. The only 2 states that have criminalized, have made it a crime for a woman to become pregnant and continue using one of the criminalized drugs, is South Carolina and most recently Alabama. And that's, again, not because the legislature passed such a law, but because the judiciary engaged in judicial activism and reinterpreted the word child to include fertilized eggs, embryos, and fetuses. But we've seen cases of arrests, detentions, forced medical interventions, and threats of those things in virtually every state. And they occur without a specific legal authority, but our research finding over 400 cases between 1973 and 2005 found that what the prosecutors do is they say, oh, look at this abortion statute we have, look at this feticide law we have, where they make claims that fertilized eggs, embryos, and fetuses have separate rights, and allow us to use that to interpret the child endangerment law to arrest a pregnant woman who delays having cesarean surgery, or arrest a woman who suffers a miscarriage or stillbirth under the feticide law.
So in cases where a woman actually is behaving in such a way that could damage the baby that she's carrying, it, should there be any way of preventing her from doing that, or, you know, trying to make sure that the baby is born healthy, born alive?
You bet. And the best way of doing that is for states to support the Affordable Care Act and make sure that every pregnant woman, every family in this country has access to the health care that they need. And major influences on outcome of pregnancy that are largely ignored are toxins in the environment, lack of access to health care, lack of access to adequate nutrition. In many of these cases where people have said, we know that if she doesn't do X, Y, or Z, or if she continues doing X, Y, and Z, there's going to be harm, over and over again, those claims have been proven wrong. So I think instead of having a framework in which we think about, well, isn't there some bad woman that we can do this to, is do we believe that other people can make those judgments and that there is a point in pregnancy when you can deprive women of their civil and human rights, including the right to make the best decisions they can under the circumstances that they live in?
But what if, say, a woman is using illegal drugs that might or might not damage the baby that she's carrying? Or what if she's drinking to excess and there's the risk of fetal alcohol syndrome?
15% to 20% of all pregnancies end in miscarriage and stillbirths. Pregnancy is a possibility, not a promise. What we know, based on carefully conducted, unbiased scientific research, has not found that prenatal exposure to any of the illegal drugs causes unique or even inevitable harm. So to target that issue and the women who sometimes use those drugs, and it's a teeny percentage of all pregnant women, far fewer than use alcohol, smoke cigarettes, experience obesity, that those women are overwhelmingly giving birth to healthy children. None of the criminalized drugs have been found to cause pregnancy losses, to cause stillbirths or infant losses. So we're targeting them based on a whole lot of junk science, a whole lot of misreporting and alarm about the various criminalized drugs, when the real risks are poverty, lack of nutrition, and lack of access to confidential health care.
My guest is Lynn Paltrow, executive director of the group National Advocates for Pregnant Women. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our interview about cases in which pregnant women are being legally punished for behavior deemed dangerous to the fetus. Our guest is Lynn Paltrow, executive director of National Advocates for Pregnant Women. As a patient, you are supposed to have privacy with your doctor. That's supposed to be just understood. But now we have cases in which medical professionals are telling law enforcement authorities about things that they think pregnant women are doing that might have a harmful effect on the fetus. Why aren't women protected when they confide something about their health, even if it is drug use, to their doctor?
Well, in many states, healthcare providers are told that they are required to report evidence of drug use by a pregnant woman as a form of civil child abuse. That report is then very often shared immediately with law enforcement and results in both punitive child welfare and criminal justice actions that every medical group says is bad for babies.
Does any state have a law saying that doctors have to report if a pregnant woman is using drugs?
There are approximately 12 states that specifically define civil child abuse to include evidence of the use of a criminalized drug. All of those states have mandatory reporting laws. And in many states, even in New York, where civil child abuse is defined by, for example, misuse of a controlled substance, not any use. A positive drug test can't tell you anything other than the fact that a person once used a drug. It doesn't tell you if they're addicted, if they're dependent, if they love their children. And yet, increasingly, people believe, even when they're not mandated reporters, that they must report.
You're seeing a range of cases in which women are being detained or prosecuted because their actions have been interpreted by law enforcement authorities as being harmful to the fetus that they're carrying. So this has included women who've used drugs, women who want to deliver vaginally, but their doctor believes, no, they have to deliver with a cesarean, and some women have been forced to have a cesarean against their will. You've given the example of a woman who fell down the stairs and then was accused of attempted murder of her fetus. Do you think that all of these different approaches relate to what's called the personhood movement?
Absolutely. The personhood movement is working to have fertilized eggs, embryos, and fetuses recognized as some completely separate constitutional persons under the law. It's not only that the particular organization, Personhood USA, it's 40 years of efforts by a variety of organizations who seek to recriminalize abortion.
And tell us what Personhood USA is.
Personhood USA is an organization that has launched campaigns in numerous states to try and get ballot measures in those states where people would vote to treat fertilized eggs, embryos, and fetuses as if they are entirely separate constitutional persons under state constitutional law.
How much progress do you think the personhood movement is making?
I don't know how to answer that. I think some of their Other groups have disagreed with their strategy. The National Right to Life Committee, to the best of my knowledge, does not support them. The United Catholic Conference of Bishops does not support them. And I think the real reason they don't is because Personhood USA makes explicit what has been going on for the last 40 years, sort of under the radar. That really the feticide laws that have passed, the anti-abortion measures that include declarations of separate rights for eggs, embryos, and fetuses are really doing the same thing, but very gradually. And what Personhood USA is doing is exposing what really is happening, which is if they succeed and fertilized eggs, embryos, and fetuses are recognized as separate persons under the law, then what happened to Alicia Beltran in Wisconsin can happen theoretically to any pregnant woman. A guardian ad litem can be appointed for a fertilized egg. So you would essentially have every pregnant woman subject to a person who is entitled to her medical records, who's entitled to require her to undergo whatever medical procedures they think is best for her, have her arrested if she doesn't obey. These are profound, not just intrusions, but we have never in the history of the United States had a movement that proposes removing a group of people from the community of constitutional persons.
Well, Lynn Paltrow, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Lynn Paltrow is the executive director of National Advocates for Pregnant Women. We'll talk with one of the leaders of the movement to grant constitutional rights to the fetus in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.